watching all the way again. Oh yeah, sit on the dock of the bay, watching the clouds roll away.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua, Three Men and a Microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages. Can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been up? Welcome, enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs. I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge, fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Mono Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out. Introducing now, in the corner of Case's Mini Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage, boxers, and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation of the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage clothing, outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpack, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's, past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York. Good morning and welcome to Canandaigua 1310 WOKR, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. It's actually two guys and Melissa, our videographer, but this is Three Men and a Microphone with Mike Yarger from Canandaigua 2020.
Good morning, Jim. Okay, we're going to start out this week with a story reported by WHEC TV 10. They're saying Ontario County ranked among the highest for opioid abuse in the Finger Lakes region. Now, that sounds terrible, doesn't it?
Terrible.
The problem is it's fake news. What? Because actually, we didn't rank all that high. According to their own survey that they published, they said Ontario County ranked 10, where Yates County ranked 12, Steuben 14.3, Monroe 15.7, and Livingston 12.4. So only Chemung, Seneca, and Schuyler counties rank lower than Ontario County.
Well, nobody goes there.
Well, I know, and that's just it. In Schuyler County, they had zero opioid abuse this year. So, you know, so it's just fake news.
Isn't that something they just throw us under the bus?
They throw something out there and they say, you know, we got to get the people interested in this. We got to give some hook or whatever. And so they say Ontario County has some of the highest rates. Well, some of, you know, that's the kicker right there. We don't have some of the highest rates. We're actually below average on this one.
This isn't even the county you go to for meth. So no. Why would it be opioids? We all know that you don't go here, you go that way.
No, right. Those people actually are coming down here and trying to sell their stuff. There was a arrest recently over at the Super 8 Hotel where two dealers had come from Rochester down here, and our police were right on top of it.
Well, I stay there all the time. I've never seen them.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the police did.
Well, they must visit there, too. Yeah.
Okay. Jane Gulick reported that a friend of hers got a bill from the Canandaigua Ambulance to go from Foster Street, which is right off of Main Street, to the hospital. It was only $2,938. Are you kidding me?
How far is that?
Yeah, that's like less than 2 miles. Less than 2 miles to go from Foster Street up to Parrish Street. Where
so $1,000 a mile.
Well, it was close to $3,000, right? So about $1,500 a mile.
Holy moly.
On top of that, they charged her $58 for gas. Right? I mean, it says on the bill,
that doesn't even cover the gas?
It's, right. The $3,000 doesn't cover the gas.
What does that cover? Just a little bit of...
No, basically...
You'll be okay. No, you're going to be okay. Well, we're almost there. That's $500, baby. That's right. Nice.
So what the EMTs were pointing out was... Basically, when you're looking at an ambulance, you're looking at a mobile hospital. They're bringing the hospital to you. So that's not an inexpensive thing to do. I mean, you've got trained personnel there. You've got all the latest equipment, all the drugs that you need, so on and so forth. So, I mean, yeah, but, I mean, this is after the insurance paid. They have a bill for $3,000.
And I recommend as a nurse to take an ambulance. Don't take Ubers like everyone's been doing lately.
Okay. So Uber, the cost for Uber to go from Foster Street, somebody looked it up. It was only $10.75. Right?
I know the Uber driver. I know the local Uber driver. Okay. He's not going to give you mouth-to-mouth.
Right.
He's not going to pump on you and go, it'll be okay. You're almost there, baby. Right. Don't worry about it.
Right. So if it's a life-threatening situation, take an ambulance. If you got a hangnail, don't worry about having a hangnail. Go ahead and take Uber up to the hospital. Right? What do you think a 12-minute flight on Mercy would cost you?
Oh, no.
$38,000. Yeah, one guy's still paying that one off. So, we also...
You know, I got to say, I probably dodged a bullet, because when I went out to aftercare, they said, you're too sick, you need to go to the hospital. I said, well, I'll just drive down there. And I was bad. And he goes, you can't drive. And I said, my wife's in the car. And he goes, oh, I thought we saw you pull up. Well, she's not very tall. So I went, you know, like this, like, oh, God. And I was horrible. And I went, okay, I'll just do my controlled breathing through pain thing. And then I drove myself. I know, I lied. I admit it. But yeah. I probably saved $3,000.
Yeah, you probably
well, more
did.
From
or
there.
Or
more, to...
right, from there up to Thompson. No telling what that bill would have come out. So We also had a house fire in Cheshire this week.
That's
They lost two dogs and one cat, but all the people survived. It was a very devastating fire. It was Allura and Keith Rose's house. So Sue Brown has set up a GoFundMe to try to raise some funds for them. And the company store in Cheshire is also collecting some donations for the family.
Oh,
so if you can afford to help them out, please do donate. And if you want to see how devastating that fire was, there's actually some helmet footage from the firemen that were at the scene that's been posted on Canandaigua 2020. And one of the firemen reached out to me and he said he was a little bit concerned because there was a bit of cussing on that footage. And he didn't know how that would play with the taxpayers here in Canandaigua. And I said, look, I recognize that when you're in heat of battle, where you're battling a fire, the language that you're going to use is not going to be the same as what you use in normal polite society. So I said I wouldn't be too concerned about that.
Anybody complains about a fireman or anybody cussing in the line of duty while they're trying to save lives
right.
is going to get a dressing down from me.
Well, there you
so
go.
So go ahead, complain. That's a life that you can't even imagine.
Well, and if you look at this footage, you see the fireman actually crawling up onto the roof, right, with the ladder. He's got the chainsaw with him. chainsaw has gas in it, right? He's cutting holes in this roof, and you can see the smoke and the flames coming up through the roof very close to where that chainsaw is. I mean, he's probably got oxygen tanks on and everything else, and as soon as that hole's open, they're off the roof and, you know, putting water in there and everything. But, yeah. I mean, these guys are really watching them perform their work. It's really a blessing to have that kind of footage.
You know, and can't forget that some of them are volunteers that do it for nothing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
All right. Also this week, we've got a point-in-time homeless survey was conducted by the Nowhere to Go group. They found that in Geneva, there were two observations of people who were homeless, and they were able to conduct one interview. In Canandaigua, there were four observations. In Victor, Farmington, there were none. Clifton Springs, none. And Naples, Honeoy, Bristol, Shortsville, Manchester were not surveyed because they didn't have enough people to cover those areas.
So they're saying that they drove around and they found homeless people?
Well, what they did was they drove around and they looked for evidence of homeless people. So what they do is they contact the first responders, the police, the firemen, things like that, people who would know where the homeless are hanging out. And they find out where these areas are. Then they go to those areas over the course of a 24-hour day, and they look for evidence of people saying going in and out of the woods, things like that. Might just be footprints or something like that. They might actually spot an encampment, something along those lines, you know, whether it's occupied, unoccupied. But they would count that as evidence of or an observation of homelessness, okay, whether it's actually somebody living there at the time or not. I mean, the person may be out collecting cans or something at the time.
So what do they do with that knowledge?
Okay, what they do is this is a requirement for them to be able to get federal grants and things of this nature. So then they'll apply to say eventually maybe build a shelter here in Ontario County or something like that so that they can better cope with the homeless population that we have.
Well, that would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that these are all the people. This is the totality of the homeless situation that we have because a lot of the homeless are temporarily sheltered in places like the motels and hotels in the area.
And why are they homeless?
Well, a wide variety of reasons. Sometimes it's drug usage. Sometimes it's just mental instability. You know, sometimes it's just down on their luck, or sometimes maybe they got an ambulance ride to the hospital and they can't afford to pay the bill.
So, right. I mean, don't forget, everybody is about three paychecks away from being home.
Is what I hear from most authorities. So, yeah.
I would say three paychecks away from homelessness.
Yeah.
You know, you miss your car payment. What do you got? You lose three car payments, they take your car. You lose your car, you can't go to work. Can't go to work, you can't pay for your house.
Right.
So many months later, that's it, you're out.
Can I step in briefly?
Jump in.
Sure. Yeah. Good morning, everybody. I just...
Armin Marinetti.
Excuse me, I'm losing my voice
here. And his pet frog.
In a previous life, I used to do financial work with people. And the rule of thumb that I was taught years ago is that you have to have at least 6 months of income set aside in case you can't go to work due to disability, illness, so on. So what I always used to preach was pay yourself first. The government takes a good chunk of your paycheck. You've got a net paycheck. Through automatic deposit, take 10% of your paycheck and build your emergency fund. And that way you can make a mortgage payment if, God forbid, you should get in a car accident and can't go to work for a month or more. So, yeah. I mean, it's...
That's good, sound financial advice.
And that's what we have to do with people that are homeless is try to help them work through it. I mean, I know we can't help fix everybody, but at least we got to try.
Right. Yeah. And one of the suggestions that came out was posted on Canandaigua 2020... was that apparently in Seattle they're giving the homeless people jobs collecting litter around the city and paying them and giving them benefits like health care, you know, things that are necessary to have a normal life. And apparently the pay is like $10 an hour, so I don't know if in Seattle that's going to be adequate to provide you shelter, but at least it's a good attempt, I think, and I would much rather see them working and earning money to get out of their situation than just be sitting home and or sitting out and collecting benefits from government.
Right. So, I agree. Yeah.
All right. Stamp prices increased this week. Did you catch that?
Oh, no. Is it going to affect my email?
Not your email, no. Thank goodness. But that's probably part of why the postal rates are going up. So instead of 49 cents, it's now 50 cents for a 1 ounce letter.
Look at all that means the price of junk mail is going to go higher.
Isn't that a good thing?
Maybe I don't know, because that's all I get in the mail is junk mail.
That's all I get in my email.
I should have a mailbox outside that says spam.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It tastes good,
that
too.
That is a good idea. Yeah.
So, Velmax in East Bloomfield is hiring for assembly and machine shop positions. They hire through Adecco, so if you have skills of that type, you might want to apply to Adecco and consider working for them. On Monday, the New York State Senate passed legislation to lower the legal hunting age from 14 to 12. I'm hoping when our folks get here, we can ask them what the impact of that's going to be and whether it has any chance of getting through and getting a signature from Governor Cuomo.
A 12-year-old with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And hopefully a parent or an adult.
Well, I'm sure that they'll be accompanied by adults. I mean, there's a lot of hunting families, right?
I was shooting when I was about 9, 10 years old with my father. He taught us gun safety at that age.
Right. Good. Right, the younger you start teaching this stuff, the better. Are you really that concerned about a 12-year-old having a gun?
In today's society, where 18 isn't even really adult anymore? Right. Yeah. Today's society, I don't know that they're ready for it. I know certain families, sure.
Yeah, but I think a lot of 12-year-olds who grew up in the city probably aren't ready for that. But I think a lot of the country kids who grow up out in the country and are used to, you know, dealing with coyotes and other predators, I think they're ready for that.
There's a lot of predators in the city, too.
Yeah.
Well, there are, but they're a different type of predator.
That need to be shot.
In recent news, there was another shooting at a high school where I think the person was 15 years old. Yeah. But, it's not the gun that's doing the shooting. The problem is not the gun. I think if a 12-year-old can have their own cell phone and go anywhere in the world on the worldwide net, they should be able to be taught by an adult, a responsible adult, how to handle a shotgun for hunting purposes.
Or a hunting rifle or whatever, right.
Yeah, so it's, again, not, the problem is bigger than the gun.
Yeah. Okay. We also had a redhead invasion this week, and I know this was a story. I know this is a story Melissa was a little concerned about. But actually, we've had a bunch of redheaded ducks gathering in large numbers on Canandaigua Lake.
I am a little quacky.
Apparently, it's only the males that are redhead.
Well, I don't have that problem.
And these birds get joined by the coots and mallards, the ringbacks, and other ducks. And it's an unusual thing to see them on Canandaigua Lake. They're usually on some of the other lakes. But because of the heavy freeze that we've had, the shallower lakes are frozen over. So the redheads have decided to congregate on the deeper parts of Canandaigua Lake. So
that's good.
Yeah, and there's some beautiful pictures. Peter Blackwood is actually a professional local photographer, and he's posted some great pictures on Canandaigua 2020 if you want to check out those redheads.
I did, and they look very tasty.
They do, don't they?
They should fan on my Ducks Unlimited sign in the window.
Well, we can't because it's covered up.
Right.
But I also want to mention the passing of Jim Ertle. I don't know if you know Jim, but he had one of the finest collections of antique tractors in the world. Literally in the world. And a couple of years ago, he decided to sell those off. I think he got something like $6 million for his collection of tractors. Now, he was a farm kid from a very young age. The Ertle Farm was very well known, and his tractor collection was world-renowned. It really was. It brought people from all over the world to Canandaigua when they auctioned it off. So he not only collected these tractors, but he also spent a great deal of time in his shop making repairs to them and fixing them up, you know, so that they would actually work. And what he did with some of the money, he and his wife Ann was they took some of that money that they got from auctioning off those tractors, and they created Light Hill, which is a comfort care facility for people in their final days. So that's located just up the hill from where their house is located. And that was a great thing. He was a great member of the community, and we wish the family our condolences, and we'll always fondly remember Jim.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard, we've got a couple Olympians from the area who are going to be at the...
Up at Bristol?
Seoul, South Korea. They actually are skiers from Bristol. That's right. Morgan Child has been named the U.S. Olympic freestyle... Yeah. U.S. Olympic freestyle ski team in the women's mogul category. I don't know the first thing about skiing.
Women's mogul?
Mogul. Category.
Sounds powerful.
Right. I think that's when they have those little hills and you see these people come tearing down the hill and they're going over these humps and
little bumps and
left
that.
And right. It's really
humps,
interesting
bumps
to watch.
And moguls.
Yeah.
And John Lillis was named to the men's aerial team. So I think that's where they actually go up in the air and do all kinds of flips and turns and things of that nature.
On skis,
right.
Wow.
So we want to wish them the greatest success in South Korea. But what you may not know is Morgan actually spent 22 months, almost 2 years, recovering from an ACL injury. And she only returned to competition in January of 2016. So it's amazing that from then to now, she's actually become one of the strongest skiers in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it is. Okay, I have an event coming up here, Canandaigua Middle School. Is holding a spaghetti dinner fundraiser on Friday, February 9th from 5 to 7 p.m. Children's and senior citizens tickets are $5. I don't know what age senior citizens is for this. Adults are $7, and you can get a family four-pack for $20. The funds are going to support an educational field trip to Washington, D.C. There will also be a silent auction, a 50-50 raffle, and a cake wheel. And tickets are available from the middle school.
Nice.
Yeah. So I want to mention, too, Denise Baylor informed us that she had to leave Canandaigua 2020.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It turns out her husband thinks she spends way too much time on here, and the group is just a bunch of nitwits. So she says
she's right
so
about that.
He gave her an ultimatum. He said it was either me or 2020.
Oh, no.
She said... She needs a few hours to pack up his clothes and put them by.
Can I do a thank you to everybody that showed up? We had that American Legion breakfast last Sunday, and it was the best turnout that we've had so far.
Nice.
We've been doing it for about 5 months now, so it's the third Sunday of the month, and it was really good. People came in, and I think they enjoyed their breakfast, so thank you all for showing up.
Well, if it keeps growing, that means the cooking is good,
yeah.
The price is good,
yep.
And the company's good.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. And I got one more story here for you. We had a building collapse in Geneva, and maybe I got more than one more story. We had a building collapse in Geneva this week. It turns out there was a front that came through. And the winds from this front were strong enough that they actually lifted the roof up and caused the building to collapse. There were two workers on site who were injured. There were five workers on site at the time. Two were injured and taken to various hospitals. And from what I understand, they're both doing very well now, so recovering well.
So the whole building collapsed?
The entire building collapsed, right, just because of the wind.
This is an OSHA getting involved in looking into that too?
Yes, they're going to be looking into that. That was Geneva Foreign and Sports. It's a car facility that was under construction at the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh?
Hey, did you hear about the pickleball?
The pickle hub.
Pickleball.
Yeah, the pickle hub.
Pickleball players were upset that the city hasn't done anything to assist them in creating pickleball.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the city redid the tennis courts in Sonnenberg Park to reline them and create pickleball courts. And pickleball courts is similar to tennis, except you're using a wiffle ball instead of a tennis ball, and you're using a wooden paddle, and you don't have to have the same range of motion that you have when you're playing tennis. So it's a little easier for those of us with some limitations to play the game. And they're saying, oh, it's one of the fastest-growing sports. Well, apparently, it's only one of the fastest-growing sports if you're a pickleball player. Anybody else who does independent research has found that, no, actually, lacrosse is the most is the fastest-growing sport.
Well, have they outgrown the ones at Sonnenberg?
Well, okay, so they're using the ones at Sonnenberg, but those are not, quote-unquote, official pickleball courts, right? They're tennis courts that have been converted to use for pickleball. So they're asking for those courts at Sonnenberg to be turned into official pickleball courts. So if you do that, right now we have three tennis courts there. You could actually get like six pickleball courts in the same space as these three tennis courts. So they want to have things redone. The problem is the city just redid these tennis courts a couple of years ago and put all new surfaces down and this type of thing. So, you know, the city, it would have been the perfect time to do it was back when the city was doing it. And, of course, their timing wasn't good. And I reached out to them. I said, look, the folks from the dog parks, they're busy raising funds. I think something like $75,000 to go towards a dog park. If you guys raise some funds, maybe the city will be able to get these pickleball courts converted for you a little quicker. So I guess they're going to look into that.
I thought cricket was the up-and-coming sports again.
Cricket.
Remember
really?
Cricket?
No,
oh,
I don't
I'm joking. That's my onion.
I think it's golf frisbee.
Well, somebody was saying that pickleball is hugely popular down at the Villages. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the Village.
It's so a different
sex,
game,
but
though.
We don't talk about it.
That's a different game.
Find right. A pickle in the pocket.
Yeah, I know. I said it, too. So...
So apparently there's like 184 pickleball courts down at the Villages. Of course, the Villages are actually over 100,000 people. And they also have something like 80 golf courses. So we don't have anything like that. We're not a comparable community, and I don't think it's fair to draw that comparison.
They also have sunshine most of the year.
Well, so do we.
Oh, yeah. You remember that song, Too Much Time on My Hands? I'm a terrible singer, but that song always comes to mind when I hear stories.
I'm going
like
to become
this.
A senior citizen the longer this story goes on. Yeah. I mean, it's pickleball.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
How much time can we spend on it?
That's
how much time do you want to spend on it? You said we got 10 minutes.
That was
5 minutes of it.
5 minutes ago.
Okay. Also, the town of Canandaigua is offering a family farm succession program to help family farmers pass the family farm from one generation to the next. Apparently, there's a lot of serious tax consequences that are involved in, you know, moving farms from one generation to the next because a lot of farmers, all their income is really tied up in the farm equipment, in the land, things of this nature, and they want to make it so that it's not such a burden for the farmers to pass this on to their future generations. And so if you're interested in that, contact the town of Canandaigua. And they can get you more information.
Good, yeah. Well, I thought Trump was going to take care of that.
Trump was going to take care of that?
Help he's with the inheritance going
when he gets
from
back
one...
from Switzerland. He's on Davros time right now. So
right.
When he
right.
gets back from Switzerland, he'll probably look into that.
Yeah, I don't know that actually made... there was an estate tax that was part of this tax bill that went through. And I don't know if that had any
impact. Oh, no,
believe
it. There's this big thing where there was a soundbite where Trump is standing in front of all the farmers.
Yeah.
And he goes, lucky for you, I got elected.
Well, maybe this is what they're going to be telling you then when you go to this thing, is that the new tax law.
My homework to look up Trump and farmers.
Yeah.
All right.
It's probably a joke in there somewhere. Don't wait for
So we're coming back with Civil War Radio.
Civil War Radio. And before we go to Civil War Radio, we're going to have the Combat Radio Network art players are going to present an interlude, a poem from Melissa J. Walker.
Oh, that's something to look for.
So if somebody would take the camera for Melissa, oh, so we can film her while she's performing her poem.
All right. As a vet myself, I wrote this knowing a lot of people that suffer from PTSD in the military. And the name of my poem is The One Amongst Many. I was taught to have the enemy fear me. I came home to my loved ones too afraid to come near me. Forever a soldier, forever a memory, torn up inside, trying not to live in misery. Why did you turn your back on me? That's what the enemy is for. I am home now, and I deserve much, much more. Old Glory is still flying high for the land of the free, but I am a prisoner to myself, trying to flee. Crying inside, wanting to die. The memories are real for me, but people don't understand what I've been through and question why. I went to war with honor, courage, and commitment. Since I've been home, I'm now discouraged, broken, and listless. There's a name for what I have, and it's a lifelong service. I gave more than I had. I am the one amongst you that is always nervous. Stay by my side. Don't be afraid. I am home now, I think, in the home of the brave. The days go by. I'm stuck inside, too afraid to go outdoors. Every noise reminds me of past days long ago. Tomorrow is never promised, even if it's my choice. After all I gave for this country, I no longer have a voice.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's powerful.
Thank you.
Very good. All right, we'll be right back after these messages. Thank you, Melissa. And when we come back, I'll let you know.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Canandaigua, 1310, three men and a microphone, WOKR, and this is our interview with Trooper O'Donnell from the State Police, New York State Police, and he's going to talk to us today about a couple subjects, and welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. What can I answer for you?
Okay. We can get right into the question. That's
perfect.
Great. Okay. So you guys just celebrated 100 years the New York State Troopers.
That's correct.
50 years for Troop E.
That's correct.
We had, last year you celebrated this.
Yes, in September we had an open house
at Troop
E headquarters. And we've been for about 100 years. New York State Police was developed in 1917, and Troop E was formed in 1967. So that headquarters you see down the road was built, and the first troopers started policing here in 1967. We broke off from Troops A and C and formed Troop E. So now you see an addition down there because we've certainly outgrown.
Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, that was one of my next questions. You guys have some big construction project going on down there. What the heck is being built?
Well, obviously, police duties and technology has changed since 1967, and we've outgrown our structure that was built initially for us. So it's going to have a new forensic identification unit to help out our investigators who investigate serious crimes, homicides, assault shootings. And it will be a great location not only for the state police but other local law enforcement agencies who have serious crimes and gather evidence to help them solve the crimes. And it'll be, not only great for the state police but for every agency in and around Western and Central New York.
So, like the local Canandaigua Police Department, if they have some forensic work they need to have done, they can reach out to the state police and...
Most smaller agencies use technology or manpower from larger agencies, and mm-hmm. we're the largest agency besides NYPD in New York State. So we have the manpower and the resources to assist other agencies. Certainly the sheriff's departments also have that certain manpower and technology to help as well. We're just bigger, and we have more assets, so we're able to come in and assess, like say Canandaigua Police Department had a homicide. We will be able to come in and assist them, bring 20 investigators, forensic people, our aviation, if they had to do a search, our canine units, because we just are more, just more numbers. And okay, when you bring more numbers in, it helps solve crimes faster.
Okay. So you mentioned aviation. Mm-hmm. And I just heard a story about you guys getting some drones.
Yes, we have drones, and it's real in its infancy stages. It'll help us get to crime scenes. Say it's in a wooded area where we're looking for lost hikers, or you know, we've had a lot of elderly people in the last several years that have gone from their house or their residence, and if they're in a wooded area, our aviation certainly and canines would help, but drones can get in places where our aviation can't, to not only locate people that might be missing, you know, in the woods or missing in general, but also crime scenes where we've had, we got to take pictures from an aerial view to help us put together crime scenes and map it out for our investigators who are in our FIU unit, our forensic identification unit. So, you know, any technology that we can have to help us solve crimes and put bad people in jail and find people that are lost or, you know, a little confused, you know, it's great.
Yeah. Oh, that is great. Okay. So I got one question I have to ask, and this one has always puzzled me. Every time I go back and forth between Rochester and Canandaigua on a thruway, mm-hmm. right, go through the toll booths, and there's a police car parked over there. It's a New York State Trooper's car.
Yep.
Right there.
Yep.
At both the Rochester and the Canandaigua. And yep. they're just sitting there. No officers in them. Or, well, I mean, are those used as backups? Or what
well,
are they doing sitting
a lot of
there?
Times, you know, the guys that work on the thruway, they can pick up a car at the, you know, the Victor or Canandaigua exit and get to a station. There are extra cars if people need to use them. And it's hard for me to speak about that because I don't work on the thruway. But okay. I know those cars don't just sit there. I know they're utilized.
Well, sometimes it seems like that's all they do is just sit there. Well, but I was wondering if it was like you know, switch
if you,
them out.
Well, or? If you went by our station in Canandaigua, there are cars just sitting there right now.
Uh-huh.
But when you are here, they're being utilized.
Yeah.
Maybe when you go back by them, you know, you're not there 24/7.
Right, exactly.
So
right.
There, you have to have cars that are available all the time. And I hate to say there's always a shortage of cars. They break down, they crash. You know, they just need vehicles to be available.
Right.
You know? If in a perfect world, we'd have take-home cars, but it's not a perfect world. But if every trooper had a take-home car, it would probably... you wouldn't see cars sitting at those stations.
Trooper O'Donnell.
Yes.
I mean, just because we're asking frivolous questions so much.
Yeah. That's okay.
Do you guys really have a plane?
We have planes. Yes.
Planes.
We have planes. We wow. have helicopters. Our aviation is, it's significant. I don't know the numbers, but I know we have probably 5+ helicopters, and I know we have a couple planes.
Do they... You know, there used to be a sign that said your traffic or your speed could be monitored by plane or something.
I used to be involved in that as a young trooper down in the Southern Tier. I don't know how much it's utilized now throughout the state with the technology that we have with lasers instead of radar. When you use radar, it used to cone out and catch several cars, but a laser, it's pretty much like shooting a gun. Shooting a laser, you put your... target your laser right on the front plate at 1,500 feet, 2,000 feet, and you shoot that vehicle 3 or 4 times. And there could be other vehicles around it, and the only reading you're getting is that license plate. Because at about 1,500 feet, it's this big.
Do people ever ask you to see the printout?
There's no printout, but when I worked the road, which was a long time ago, when I would shoot a car, I would shoot it 3 times and take the lowest speed. And then I would set my laser down, and they wouldn't see me. And then when they saw me, you could see their car dip down because they're hitting the brakes. And then by the time they went by me, they're going the speed limit. Now they see me pull out, and it takes a little while to catch up. And then by the time I pull them over and get out of my car and question them, they've already convinced themselves that they weren't speeding. So it's... I didn't clock you as you passed me. I clocked you at 1,500 feet or 1,800 feet. It's actually like... 1,573 feet. It gives you an exact amount of feet and the speed. And like again, you shoot the car 3 times, take the lowest speed at that, and then set the laser down. People have asked me, I want to see the speed. Well, I can show you the speed on the laser. I could show you any speed on a lift. Like, I got a shot a car 10 minutes ago. So basically, it doesn't give it. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't mean it was your car. I'm saying it was your car. I did a visual estimate, which I could take you out in a car and show you in 10 minutes how easy it is to make visual estimates on motor vehicles. We're trained to be accurate within plus or minus 5 miles an hour on the speeds of motor vehicle and have been trained in it. We go to the New York State Police Academy for 26 weeks. It's from 6 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night. We're taught all kinds of laws, physical training. It's paramilitary. We're not civil service. We're by order of the governor. It's the real deal. And I try to tell people, I would never try to tell a mechanic how to fix my car because I don't know how to fix a car. But I'm trained, and every day we do it. And if you worked on cars for 5 years or 10 years after taking a 26-week basic training course, you'd probably be pretty good at what you do.
Right.
And, you know, we tell people, they don't just give us this gray uniform and this big hat, you know, as we walk in the door. We got to earn it. And it takes a process to get in the academy, a written exam, a physical fitness exam, a background investigation, polygraph, tons of people that have to say that, you know, you're of good moral character and you have integrity and you'd be a good fit for the state police. Then you have to make it through 26 weeks of grueling academic and physical fitness type of a boot camp. Basically, it's basic training for 26 weeks. So it's not anything that you could just walk in and make it. So,
well, I didn't ask you this. Yeah. I'm not sure how to ask you this now when you first come on, but if you were a military veteran just getting out of the service.
Yes.
Young guy, did your 4 years.
Yes.
What would you suggest to him or her to be able to present themselves better to join the state police?
You know, we love hiring former military people. We love hiring military people. Our basic training, if you've been through a basic training for the military, it's very similar. It's just longer. It's just 26 weeks.
It is longer.
It's not an 8-week or 12-week boot camp. We have, specifically the state police, because we are paramilitary, we salute, we have commissioned officers, sir, yes, sir, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, ma'am. It's a little different than academies and training for any other police department in New York State. And we do recruit heavily from military bases when we are having an exam. And we welcome, you know, men, women of any race, ethnic origin to come out and take our exam. And certainly we support the military, and we're brothers and sisters in gray and blue, and we would encourage anyone in the military that was interested in becoming a trooper to give us a call, and we'd love to have them.
Do you know when the next opening is?
You know, we just had the exams. We just had the exams in October. It's going to be probably a three-year minimum before we offer another exam.
Wow.
You know, it's extensive. We have 25 to 35,000 people take it statewide.
Wow.
And we hire probably in 3 years, we probably hire 3,000, I'd say 2,000 to 3,000 people, because we had the attrition rate that retire. Anyone with 20 to 39 years is the most you can have, because there's a mandatory retirement at age 60 that are eligible to retire. So we probably have, in a month's period, 1 to 4 people retire every month. So we have to keep up with that.
Did Dave Batiste make the 39-year mark?
I'm not sure. Who's that?
Batiste? David? He's a local trooper who's just retiring. I think he's probably been there like 50 years.
Well, he must have started when he was 10, because you got to retire at 60. You know, you have to be 20 to take our exam, 21 by time of appointment. Certainly in the military, you can use veteran credits to help your score. Say you're a veteran and, you get 5 extra credits. If you get 100, you got 105. So
that's good.
You can use it on any exam in the state police. We only have 3 competitive exams. 1, to get in the state police. 2, competitive exam for sergeant, and 3 for competitive exam for lieutenant. You can only use it once, though.
Your veteran points.
Yes.
Wow.
You can only use that credit once, either your initial exam for sergeant or lieutenant. So, you know,
that's good.
But we encourage veterans, and we're a big fan of them.
Good.
So the pistol requirement is coming up.
Yep.
You got to register, and I'm going to ask a question. I can't possibly happen to anybody else. But if you got the letter to register your pistol permit, but you don't have a pistol permit, what do you do? And by the way, if you go online and you don't have a pistol permit number, you can't put that data in, so therefore you can't finish the form.
Well, you got to go to the county that... Let me.
You get a letter, but you don't own a pistol, or you don't have a pistol permit. Then what do you do? Do you still?
You go down the county building where you live, and you say, "Hey, I don't have a pistol permit, but I got this letter. How do we straighten this out?"
Okay. All right.
Okay. Now I want to ask you too. At the beginning of winter, I saw this story about the state police are going to be clamping down on cars that weren't cleaning off the snow from their vehicles.
Wow.
Have you seen a lot of that?
I don't know about clamping down. You know, we just want the roads safe for everybody.
Right,
you know,
right.
And, you know, I'm sure you've seen it where people are driving through holes.
Yes.
And it's dangerous.
It's
dangerous for the person operating that vehicle, anyone in that vehicle, and everyone around them.
Right.
And, you know, we want people to be as safe as possible, whether it's, you know, texting and driving, talking on the phone and driving, talking to your children, talking to other people in the car. You know, driving a car is an important thing, and you must have visibility from your front windshield, your side windows, and your rear window. It's not a lot to ask for someone to brush off their cars.
Right.
So it's important that, you know, you brush off your cars.
Okay.
So,
and they're saying the snow on top, too, right?
You know,
stuff like that, which is fine,
I think. Listen, let's start with this. Just be reasonable, okay? You know, if you're reasonable, you take, you know, hey, I brushed off my car, start it up, get an automatic starter, brush it off the best you can, and, you know, give it a minute for it to warm up and let the snow get off your, you know, you want to be safe. And I can tell you, if you crash because your car's not properly brushed off, not only you might be ticketed, but... Now you kind of could put your car in the shop. You might have to get a tow truck. It's a pain in the butt. So, you know, you can do it for yourself.
Right.
It is something else when you're stuck behind somebody and all their snow is blowing on your truck.
Yeah.
And you've already brushed all your snow off. You know where I'm a little extra care?
Mm-hmm.
Is I don't want to get pulled over for snow by the license plate on the back where it builds up.
Yeah.
So I'm always going back there going,
Yeah, we want to see your plate.
Right.
Just so we know you're legal.
I don't want that to be the reason
for
getting pulled over.
Right. Now, as I understand it, the state police are the ones that are doing the investigation on the shooting of Sandy Guardiola.
Yes.
From the city of Canandaigua.
Yes.
Sergeant Cadian discharged his weapon in that situation. And my understanding is it's going to be like 6 months before we get the toxicology report on that.
You'd have to... The medical examiner would be the one to ask that.
Okay.
We don't do toxicology.
Oh, you guys don't?
No.
You don't have facilities to do that.
Well.
You will.
No, the person's deceased.
Right.
So we don't have a medical examiner's office down the street. When the person's deceased, they go to a medical examiner's office.
Okay.
You know, we collect data from the crime scene. We collect any expended rounds, you know, information, take pictures. If there's blood splatter or anything like that, we do that. But we don't take any deceased people to our station and conduct a medical exam.
Okay, so you're not taking any, like, samples of the blood that's been spilled.
We don't take any person who's deceased ever
to
our station
okay.
and conduct a medical exam.
Okay.
I'm a trooper.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
I've been one for... almost 30 years.
Okay.
I'm not a medical examiner.
Okay.
I wouldn't know what to do.
Okay.
You know, I didn't go to that school.
Should have asked the other guy running for sheriff.
Well, well, you know what? He wouldn't do that either.
Oh, he wouldn't.
Well, not Silvio, the other.
Oh.
Remember the.
Not Silvio.
Yeah, Henderson.
Henderson, yeah.
Yeah, medical examiners do that.
Okay.
Troopers don't.
Okay.
Ever.
All right.
Ever.
Okay.
We don't conduct medical exams.
That up.
Well, we're not doctors, so
right.
You know we're troopers, so we don't do that.
I don't know what questions he's going to ask.
That's okay. I've been doing this 30 years. I kind of know what we do and what we don't do.
I took that class at MCC, so say you got like a shot in the wall there, and the way it's the hole is
the angle you mean?
The angle, you take measurements and everything to see where it might have came from.
Yeah.
Ever since Dexter, now everybody's up on the
Well, you know, I'll even go this far. You know, CSI, New York, Miami, all that stuff. It's really created a mess for us because it's not like it is on TV. I told people it's not glamorous. You're not going to drive around in a $400,000 car on a $500,000 boat. You're going to, you know, you're going to make a living. You're going to work hard, and you're going to try to solve crimes. And we have certain tactics that we use, but when they show computer screens and computers and all this technology, and their stations are state of the art, we're trying to get there. But you will not start with the New York State Police and be a CSI investigator. You'll work as a trooper on the road for 5 to 10 years, do a good job, and then put in for what you're interested in, whether it's canine, SWAT team, which is called our SOAR team, Special Operations Response Team, aviation, scuba. There's so many different crime scene investigator, undercover investigators. There's so many things that you can do on our job that most other agencies have, but we just have more of them. So each troop has a spokesperson. I happen to be the spokesperson in this troop. Not every department has a spokesperson because they don't have that luxury of having that. You know, you got a small department. Some 10 or 15 man department or men or women department don't have that luxury. But I handle the media for a 10 county region, so it's not like I handle it for a small village. I go from Brockport, Monroe, Orleans County line to Auburn by Syracuse, from the lake to Pennsylvania. So, I was in the Pennsylvania border 2 nights ago.
Wow.
So.
I got to stop saying wow. You started it.
That's my
thing.
That's my
line. Let me ask you this one question that pertinent to the store. It is the question. This store, Iron Mike's Military Exchange.
All right, perfect.
Everybody comes in, quotes this law wrong. I used to have a direct line to somebody in Albany. I think it was Albany. For the state police. And I call this one guy, and he's told me, he goes, you want a breakdown of the definition of the law as it applies in New York State? I'm the guy to give that to you. And I don't remember who he was, but I remember it was Albany.
Hmm.
And then sometimes I'd call down and I'd say his name wrong, and then he'd get mad at me, and they go, who do you really mean? And I don't know. So anyways, here's the question. Everybody in my store wants to know. What is legal when it comes to a knife? What's illegal?
Well,
besides
illegal is a switchblade, a dagger, a double-edged knife, also a knife that will come out. You know, if you press a button, it'll come out. I'm not sure the exact terminology of that. Those are deadly weapons. You know, you can carry.
Don't look for an example.
Again, be reasonable. I had a young kid walk into one of the malls in Rochester around the holidays of several years ago, and he had a knife on the outside of his pants. It was probably 10 inches long. It was a big knife.
And he took it to the mall.
And he took it to the mall because he wanted attention. Well, I was shopping. I was off duty. And he got my attention. But he got attention from a worker at Dick's Sporting Goods, and he told him that he couldn't come in the mall, and he started telling him that he was a U.S. citizen, he knew his Second Amendment rights, and I get there, and he's causing all kinds of alarm and panic, and people are, you know, they're a little anxious when you see a person walk in a crowded area with a big knife, and it was big. So I happened to be Christmas, it was right around Christmas, I happened to be Christmas shopping, and I set down my bags, and I was in plain clothes, and I said, hey, I'm a New York State trooper. I identified myself. I said, you cannot come in the mall with this. You can walk around your apartment, your house. You're going to cause all kinds of problems with it. And then he started telling me about, you know, his rights and everything. And I'm like, you know, that's great, but now you're causing alarm at a public area, and it's a private property. You can't come in here. So him and I had a spirited discussion, and he decided to leave. So, it all worked out.
But it's not because this doesn't make sense to me. Everybody goes, well, whether the knife can go more than the width of the palm of your hand. So, Andre the Giant gets to carry a K-bar.
Well,
Little Wimpy Tim gets a folder.
I don't know about that. We're more worried about a dagger, a switchblade. You know, I think carrying a knife, though, you know, hate to say it, those days are kind of behind us for the up-and-comer, the new... bad guys, we'll call it. They carry guns, you know, and, you know, yeah, we're concerned with stabbings and knives. Yeah, we're concerned, but More police officers get shot than stabbed by far. I don't know what the statistics are. I would say it's 10 to 1 that people shoot police officers as opposed to stabbing them. And stabbing someone, you know, I've said this for a while, and it's my own opinion. It's personal. When you want to stab someone, you got to get up close and personal. Right. And you know, again, knives are dangerous. They're deadly. Certainly, we don't want to come in contact with anybody who has a knife, but. We don't carry, some of us carry knives in case you got to cut somebody out of a seatbelt or for various other reasons. But I carry a gun and, hate to ever have to challenge anybody with a knife or a gun, but we're trained to do so.
So pretty much practicality in the situation.
You know what? If everybody was just reasonable, and again, the law, you know, I don't think there's six of us. I don't think we could agree what to get on a pizza, much less what laws should be passed and what laws should not be passed, and you know, all that stuff. So you know, when you everybody has their own opinion, their own right, that's fine. But you know, we live in this democracy, and laws are passed by the legislative branch. We are not the legislative branch. We have nothing. Let me repeat, nothing to do with any law that's ever been passed. No New York State trooper has ever been. Involved in passing a law. However, we're the executive branch, and we enforce laws that are passed by the legislature, and we have to do that. We are neutral. You know, certainly we support laws that are safe or, you know, promote safety to whether it's, you know, vehicle and traffic safety or safety within other citizens in law enforcement. But we have nothing to do with whatever laws that are passed. Now, the judicial branch, they are the ones that put down the penalty for people that break the laws, but we don't have anything to do with the penalties that are imposed by the judicial branch, by the judges who listen to the arguments in court and hand down punishments or penalties. So we do investigations. You make an allegation, we'll come and investigate it, we'll exhaust all our leads, we'll bring our information to the DA, and they'll determine whether they're going to prosecute it or we'll make a summary arrest. So it's a crazy job. It's a interesting job. Put it this way, we're regular people that do an extraordinary, crazy job, and we try to do it the best we can.
Well, I think you have.
Thanks.
And, you know, we meet a lot of state police in here, mm-hmm. and you know, I got to say, I've always been impressed.
Thank you.
You
appreciate
know,
it.
And we all
right,
are very
the level of professionalism that you see in the state police department mm-hmm. is unmatched.
That's really, I appreciate that.
That's a good
Thank
way
you.
To put it, because there is a lot of professionalism there. And I don't, everybody here would agree. These are gentlemen from Scope, and mm-hmm. Mike, you know, is a mm-hmm. local resident.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're very appreciative of
Thank
everything
you
do for us.
Thanks. Appreciate the support. It's important, and we appreciate all the support. You know, we're at functions and festivals and different places, and people come up to us and say, thank you for your service. And it goes a long way. It really means a lot. And this past summer, two 18 to 20-year-olds came up and said that, and it was by far the youngest set of people that have ever said that. And I spoke with them, and I let them know how much it meant to me personally that people support what we do, and it goes a long way. So I thank you for those kind words.
Well, thank you. We thank you for your service.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Have a great day. And
all right, thank you.
In.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nice to meet you.
Stay safe.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
This has been a Combat Radio production of Three Men and a Microphone. Check us out every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. on WOKR 1310, and our encore performance every Sunday afternoon, 2 to 4 p.m. And I'd like to thank all of my co-hosts, Armin Marinetti, Civil War Radio, Melissa Walker, our videographer, and from Canandaigua, Facebook 2020, Mike Yarker. And I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, and thank you for listening to our show, and we'll see you on the flip side, and be good.